TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Family Farmers versus Monsanto. When the UC Berkeley scientist Ignacio Chapella discovered contamination from Monsanto's genetically altered corn in indigenous plantings in Mexico that had remained pure for several thousand years, the agrochemical giant did not apologize. Instead of offering restitution, they suggested that they should be paid. When the Canadian farmer Percy Schmeiser found that his canola crop was ruined by GMO seeds from a neighbor's field, they became serious about their demands. In 2001, Monsanto successfully sued Schmeiser for patent violation over Roundup Ready canola. 10 years later, Monsanto has filed 144 lawsuits against farmers in at least 27 different states for alleged infringement of its transgenic seed patents. Another 700 cases were settled out of court. Meanwhile, in ever larger agricultural areas in the US and Canada, organic farmers can no longer grow crops such as corn, wheat, canola, or soybean because they're being pollinated by GMO plants grown by their neighbors. An extremely important event occurred in Federal District Court in Manhattan on January 31, 2012. The Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association had filed suit against Monsanto on behalf of 83 family farmers, seed businesses, and organic agricultural organizations. They are challenging Monsanto's practice of suing those who they damaged. When the suit was filed in March of 2011, Monsanto filed a motion to dismiss it. This motion was heard on January 31st. As this program goes to air, the judge is deciding whether this landmark lawsuit by farmers will go forward or whether Monsanto will succeed in squelching it. Daniel Ravitcher is the attorney for the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association. I recorded him at the Heirloom Seed Expo in Santa Rosa, California, where he explained this lawsuit in animated detail. Daniel Ravitcher.
Thank you for coming. Well, how many of you, I'm sure most of you, are familiar with the fact that there are companies out there that sell seeds for which they believe they have patents? Okay. So we have companies who have genetically modified seeds to adopt certain traits that are not natural to that variety or to that vegetable or that plant. And they believe this, it merits a patent so that no one else can make or use that seed. Now at the patent office, they say they've invented something. They spent nights and weekends and lots of money researching and developing these genetically modified seeds. They're really different and just great whiz-bang things that merit a patent. At the Food and Drug Administration or the U.S. Agriculture Administration or whatever, they say, it's the same food. Don't regulate us. We're no different. We don't need to be labeled. We don't need to be regulated. We don't need safety testing because we're exactly the same. But at the patent office, they say, we're totally different and we deserve a patent. Okay, so these companies get these patents, and then what do they do with them? How many here have ever seen a bag of Monsanto corn seed or canola or soy, cotton? Well, if you look on the back of that bag, there's a little box there that says warning, there's dangers, you know, don't eat this, you know. Larger than that, higher up on the bag is a box that says, warning, stop. These seeds are protected by our patents. You may only use these seeds in the ways that we allow you to. You cannot redistribute them to anyone else. You can't save seed for a second year. You have to abide by our terms. I actually found this shocking, even as a patent attorney, I found it shocking that more important than the health warnings on these bags is the patent license information. So next time you see one of these bags, if you've never noticed that, take a look. You'll see it. So Monsanto has not only patented their genetically modified seed and labeled it on their bags, when you go to buy their seed, you have to also sign a license agreement. It's called a technology stewardship agreement. And in this agreement, it says, you agree, again, to abide by whatever restrictions we want to place on your use of this seed. If there's ever a dispute between us about our seed, it has to be heard in St. Louis, which is where they're headquartered. It doesn't matter where you buy their seed from. And you have to sign this before you're allowed to buy their seed. But not only do they patent their seed, put these patents on their bags, make you sign a license agreement, they also will sue people for patent infringement. They've actually sued farmers for infringing their patents on their genetically modified seed. Anybody want to guess how many farmers they've actually sued for patent infringement? 5, 10? Well, it's actually only 144. Okay. But still, 144 lawsuits against farmers, that's a lot of lawsuits. And that doesn't tell us how many threats of lawsuits they've made that have been kept private because the farmer was so scared that they settled and did whatever Monsanto demanded before it got to the point of a lawsuit. Under basic patent law, anyone who makes, uses, sells, or offers to sell a patented thing is committing infringement. And unlike in copyright law, where we have a fair use defense for criticism or for safety checking or other bases that we think is more important than copyright law, in patent law, we have no fair use. So even if you just wanted to do research on Monsanto's genetically modified seed, that would be patent infringement. You could be sued and stopped. So if there's a lack of research about their seed, Monsanto is to blame because they prohibit unfettered research on their seed due to their patents. We have no research exception. We have no safety exception to patent infringement. So many of the farmers they've sued are farmers who actually wanted to use Monsanto's genetically modified seed and just didn't abide by the license agreement. You know, they were told you can't save seed for the next season. They save seed. But Monsanto has actually also asserted their seed against farmers who didn't want to have anything to do with it. Now, how is that possible? Let me just ask a question. You're growing your crops as you see fit. You don't want to use genetically modified seed. Your neighbor decides to use genetically modified seed. That seed contaminates your property. How many people think you should be able to actually sue your neighbor for that injury? Okay. How many people think the owner of patents on that seed should be able to sue you when you've been contaminated? Okay, well, you can be. Once your property comes into possession of Monsanto's seed, they can assert their patents against you, and they have done so against others. Okay, if you don't believe me, you can go to my organization's website, which is pubpat.org, or just do a Google search for organic seed versus Monsanto, and you'll find our webpage, which has the CBS Evening News stories profiling people who were accused of patent infringement by Monsanto who never wanted to have anything to do with their seed. Okay, so let's pause that conversation for a minute and let me just step back. A few decades ago, Congress passed the Declaratory Judgment Act. And what the Declaratory Judgment Act allows you to do is if you believe you might get sued, you have the right to go to court first, preemptively sue that other person, not to get money, but simply to get a ruling from the judge that you're not doing anything wrong. Okay, so why did Congress create this law? Let's say there's one company that's building automobiles, and they have a patent on automobiles, and you want to build a competing company. They send you a letter that says, well, if you build that factory, we'll sue you. Well, Congress wants to allow that person, before they make the investment in building the factory, to preemptively sue the patent holder and get a declaration that says, you could never sue me, therefore I have safety in investing in building this factory. So that's the reasoning behind the Declaratory Judgment Act. So we filed on behalf of 83 agricultural organizations, farmers, and seed distributors a Declaratory Judgment Act lawsuit against Monsanto. And some of our clients are actually here in the room and at the expo, Baker Creek Heirloom Seeds. Demeter Organization. We've got OSCADA, it's Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association. They're our lead plaintiff. They're here. Southern Exposure Seed Exchange as well. So what are we asking the court to do in our lawsuit? We're not asking the court to award our plaintiffs any money. We're not asking them to necessarily stop Monsanto from distributing their seed. We're merely asking the judge to say that if our clients are ever contaminated by genetically modified seed, Monsanto never has the right to sue them for patent infringement. That's all we're asking the judge to do. And Monsanto has on their website this interesting little commitment. They're pretending to do the right thing. On their website, they actually have a statement that says they will not assert their patents against those who come to possess, and listen closely, who come to possess trace amounts of their seed through inadvertent means. Now, is that language only a lawyer could love? What does that mean? Have you been contaminated by a trace amount through inadvertent means or not? How do you know that? So after we filed the lawsuit, but before we actually served the complaint on Monsanto, because the ball's not actually in their court until you actually serve the complaint on them. You've probably all seen that in the movies where the guy's trying to find the person to serve them. Okay, so we filed the complaint just to like hold our place in line, but we didn't serve it on them. We wrote them a letter, just a simple letter. Hey, you know who we are now. We've gone completely public. We are people who don't want to use your seed. We don't have anything to do with your seed at all. On your website, you say you would never sue people who come to possess trace amounts through inadvertent means. But we're not sure if that protects us or not. So if you would just simply write us back a short little letter saying you would never sue us for patent infringement, we'll go away. Okay? How many people think Monsanto did that? So how many people here know what the Solicitor General, who the Solicitor General of the United States is? So there's a Department of Justice, which represents the United States in court, and at the top of the Department of Justice is the Attorney General. So like Janet Reno, Eric Holder, etc. Well, also in the Department of Justice is the office called the Solicitor General. And that's the person who represents the United States in the Supreme Court. So it's basically thought as like the country's best actual lawyer, whereas the Attorney General has to be part manager, part lawyer, you know, run the whole operation. The Solicitor General under Bill Clinton, his name was Seth Waxman. You know, and Bill Clinton's no longer in office, so Mr. Waxman's now employed by a very prestigious law firm, D.C. So when we wrote the letter to Monsanto, instead of simply responding, of course we would never sue your plaintiffs, many of whom are organic, some of whom are biodynamic, not all of whom are organic, some of them are just simply non-GMO. Instead of simply responding by saying, we would never sue your, of course we would never sue your clients for patent infringement. Instead of doing that, they went out and hired Mr. Waxman and his law firm to represent them in a lawsuit. So they now have six high-priced Washington, D.C. lawyers defending themselves in this lawsuit where all we're asking for is not a single red penny. We're just asking for some peace of mind. Because if our clients are contaminated, it's them that actually suffer the economic injury that threatens their organic certification, their ability to sell into certain markets, their ability, their reputation. They're the ones that suffer. Monsanto doesn't suffer when their seed contaminates our client's property. Instead of simply responding by saying, we would never sue your, of course we would never sue your clients for patent infringement. Instead of doing that, they went out and hired Mr. Waxman and his law firm to represent them in a lawsuit. So Mr. Waxman and his legal team filed a motion to dismiss our lawsuit, saying that this is not worth the court's time. That, you know, we're making up these problems out of thin air, that we're, you know, this is baseless, that this is all just a publicity stunt. So they filed this motion with the judge. The case has been filed in the Southern District of New York, which is in Manhattan. Now, thankfully, in support of our ability to bring the case, other agricultural organizations, such as Slow Foods USA and others, signed a brief in support of us. But let me just step back and tell you what some of the arguments are that we're making in the case. Because we can't just go to a judge and say, you should rule that they can never sue us. We actually have to give you a reason why they don't have a basis to sue us. Well, one of them is, of course, just the pure fairness that why should they be able to sue us when it's their product that contaminates us and we didn't want to have anything to do with it? Okay, that's what we call an equitable argument. One of the other arguments we make, most preeminently, that you might find most interesting, is based on the rule of patent law that you can only have a patent on something if it is socially useful. Okay? And there's a very old case, about 150, 160 years old now, by a very well-respected judge who said, for example, an invention to poison the people is not patentable. So we argue in our case, if the judge allows us to do so, that patents on genetically modified seed are invalid under patent law itself because genetically modified seed lacks any social utility. And in our initial filing with the court, which you can get from our website, we go into detail with all the scientific evidence that is available, proving that the promises of genetically modified seed have been false. It does not increase yield. It does not reduce herbicide use. In the long term, it's actually injurious to not only production capacity, but also the rhizosphere, which is a term I've only recently learned. Everyone knows what rhizosphere is?
No.
It's the dirt around a plant. It's a fancy, you know. In law school, I had a professor. I'm one of those law professors who tells stories every once in a while. So in law school, one of my professors said, well, the rationale for this decision, and everyone in the class is like looking at each other like, rationale? What's rationale? And he goes, oh, well, what I mean to say is the rationale. But lawyers make things sound fancy so that you think you don't understand what we're saying. Okay, but they're actually very simple concepts. So in the original complaint that we filed with the court, we document why genetically modified seed does not have the benefits that were promised. And in addition, the evidence shows that it has harmful effects on society. It has harmful environmental effects by increasing the use of glyphosate, which has a residual negative effect on the soil system and the runoff into our water. That there's economic damage by allowing patents on genetically modified seed, because then one seed company can monopolize and streamline seeds, and that there's a threat to society if we allow just a few varieties to exist. We need diversity. And that there's also real reason to believe that there are substantial health effects. You know, I didn't really start working on this case till about a year ago when I met a farmer in Virginia who came up to me to talk to me about this after a talk I was giving about another case. And the analogies to tobacco, smoking, or asbestos are just strikingly clear to me, right? We have a large company or companies that are making a lot of money off a certain product that they swear is safe, they promise it's safe, they keep saying there's no evidence that it's unsafe. But common sense just tells us this hasn't been thoroughly verified yet. And not just common sense, a lot of the rest of the world doesn't believe this stuff is safe. That's why they reject it, or they're at least having pause, or let's allow the studies to be done. Let's allow unfettered research to be performed. So that's our lawsuit, and that's why I'm here today, to meet with people who actually do this, or have been doing this for a living. I've had my eyes completely wide open throughout this entire experience. I've traveled all around from Maine to California. I was just in San Antonio yesterday speaking with people. This is an important issue. And raising awareness about the case will be helpful to us achieving our ultimate goal, which is to affect consumer opinion and consumer choices. Right? Getting a pyrrhic victory in the courts is not something that's going to actually help my clients. Right? We actually want to educate people and actually change behavior. And we know that Monsanto has access to public relations and press relations at the top of the ladder. So we're going to be more, not to be a pun, but organic about it. And start at the bottom, talking with people, answering questions, meeting people, so that you can then talk to others about it. You can get information about our case. So with that, I think I've lectured enough, and I would love to answer any questions that people have. Yes, ma'am.
Monsanto has the best lawyers, and how do you fight them? I mean, this costs a lot of money.
Oh, so repeat the question. How can you have any hope of winning when you're going up against such a large, well-funded opponent? Well, that one reason is you have to choose your forum. Thankfully, there are multifaceted attacks underway against Monsanto's genetically modified seed. There are other lawsuits brought by other lawyers, such as the Center for Food Safety, who are actually suing Monsanto and the government for approving, as recently, genetically modified alfalfa. And how we have confidence in winning is you just know you're right. Okay? And we have judges in this country who actually will be open-minded, and as long as you have an opportunity to make your case to them, you hope that they'll make the best decision. And generally, the courts have not been holding the provider of a product responsible for any injury that that product then causes to a third party. So when Monsanto sells its seed to Farmer A, and then Farmer A contaminates Farmer B, Farmer B generally does not have a right to sue Monsanto for that injury, but Farmer B does have a right under state law to sue Farmer A for either nuisance and or trespass, you know, the same kind of injury you'd write to sue them if, you know, a lot of these cases so far have been glyphosate spray drift, which has then caused stunted growth on the organic farmer's land. I've been outside of Lubbock, Texas, and I've seen the organic cotton field where there's a big swath of it that's 3 feet shorter than all the other cotton behind it. And it's clear that what happened was the glyphosate just blew over, or the plane didn't turn off the switch at the right time and just stunted all the growth of the organic cotton when it was supposed to only be sprayed on the GMO cotton field across 12-foot wide strip of road. But I do predict those kinds of cases in the future. But let me just say just one other thing. I have also heard that the government is trying to investigate some way to resolve this, because as we said earlier, Monsanto concedes contamination happens. Some of the rumors I've heard is that their proposed solution is to provide some kind of insurance fund, and perhaps even a taxpayer-funded insurance fund. So you've heard of taxpayer bailout of the banks. Now the genetically modified seed distributors want a taxpayer bailout of their own seed when it contaminates other people. Not to mention the fact that that could then ruin the certification of that farm and take 3 years to become recertified. So it's a big issue, and I think the more publicity we can get around that issue, the better the outcome will be. Yes, sir.
Can you explain what utility patents are?
Right. So when I've been saying the word patent all day here, I've meant utility patent. The other two kinds of patents are design patents, which are basically like trademarks, which is on the way something looks, not its functionality. And plant patents, which are on plant varieties. And there is a very big Supreme Court case when Congress passed the plant patent law. There's a big case that said, well, genetically modified seed people shouldn't be allowed to have both plant patents now and utility patents. Mm-hmm. And the Supreme Court said, well, Congress didn't say they couldn't have both, and so it's fine with us for them to have both. So these genetically modified seed companies can have both plant patents on their new plant varieties and utility patents on their genetically modified seed. One of the overarching problems we have, which is manifesting itself in this area as well, is the lack of accountability for our elected officials. They can make decisions that will have long-term negative effects on us without any repercussions, because by the time the effects are being materialized, they're already out of office. Right? The people who made these bad decisions are long gone. It's kind of like corporate CEOs who do whatever they can to pump up their stock price while they're there, not caring what long-term effects those decisions have. So this was the decision was made. We don't need to have safety and efficacy testing for genetically modified food because it's equivalent. And the government officials at the time just accepted that because either they were too naive if we want to believe nicely about them, or they were corrupt if we want to think badly about them. They simply define genetically modified seed as not being a new chemical entity, which is subject to all the pharmaceutical regulations. What I usually say to people when they say, you don't know what you're talking about, I'd be like, okay, write me an insurance policy. You will cover all of my and my family's health expenses in the future, which are contributed to in any way by the consumption of genetically modified seed. And I will pay you $1 for this insurance policy. And if you're so confident that there's nothing wrong with genetically modified seed, that's $1 in profit for you, because you'll never have to spend a dollar to pay out. No one will give me that insurance policy. And that's what I like to ask Monsanto. Give me that insurance policy. Give me an... Right, so if we win, we'll set precedent, which we believe would be applicable to anyone else who's similarly situated. We represent Farmer Johnson and win for Farmer Johnson. Well, if you're Farmer Adams and you're in the same situation, you're an organic farmer or a biodynamic farmer or simply a non-GMO farmer who doesn't want to have anything to do with their seed and you can contaminate, Monsanto could never sue you because they couldn't sue Farmer Johnson. In addition, if we get their patents ruled invalid because they lack social utility, then they have no patents to sue anyone with anyways.
That was Daniel Ravitcher. He's the attorney for the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association, representing 83 family farmers, seed businesses, and organic agricultural organizations with over 300,000 members. When filing the suit in 2011, Jim Gerritsen, president of OSCATA, said, "Americans have the right to decide what kind of food they will feed their families. Organic farmers have the right to raise our organic crops for our families and our customers on our farms without the threat of invasion by Monsanto's genetic contamination. America asserts her right to justice and pure food," end quote by Jim Gerritsen. As this program is produced on February 5th, 2012, the judge is considering the motion by Monsanto to dismiss this suit. Follow the case on the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association website, www.osgata.org, or on fooddemocracynow.org, or on the site for the lawyers' nonprofit, the Public Patent Foundation, pubpat.org. You can find the links to these sites, as well as to TUC radio programs on the early cases involving Monsanto with Ignacio Chapella and Percy Schmeiser on TUC Radio's website. You can get information on how to order an audio CD of Protecting the Seed, Family Farmers vs. Monsanto by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation or CD order keeps this program on the air. Call anytime at 707-463-2654 for information on how to order. You can get your CD by mail or credit card by phone or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.